allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Guess I suppose we've done that, huh?
Doesn't matter, really. Think about it.
Pay attention there.
First order of business today, I would like to read a prepared statement here on the, pertaining to the Board of Revisions. Revised Code 5715.02 provides the county treasurer, the county auditor, and the president of the Board of County Commissioners shall constitute the county Board of Revisions. As president of the Board of County Commission for 208, I would normally be the commissioner representative on the board. However, the Board of Revisions is about to consider the 208 reappraisal, and Commissioner Don Dixon has committed a great deal of time and energy to this 208 reappraisal, such that his expertise would be an asset to the Board of Revisions in its reappraisal decision. Accordingly, I hereby designate Commissioner Dixon to serve in my place and stead on the Butler County Board of Revisions for and during the Board of Revisions consideration of the 208 appraisal.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Let's go into communications, please.
Okay, today we have six travel requests for you to consider. The first is for Brad Berry, the Information Services Department for Oracle Database. Administrators released to training. This is December 15th and 19th for $2,500 in San Diego. Second, we have Rhonda Fries, Record Center, to attend the CCAO Annual Winter Conference, Columbus, Ohio, December 8th, $35. Next, we have Danny Crank and Denise Gall, Recorder's Office, to attend the Winter Conference, Washington, D.C., March 3 to 6 for $2,000. Next, we have Doug Duckett, Personnel Department, to attend the OPERLA 25th Annual Training Conference, Newark, Ohio, February 2nd to 3rd, $800. Next, we have Dale Sweeterman, Kar Singh, and we will go on to include Mark Loafer and Steve Miles and Dave Quimby into engineers training at the OTEC Conference, Columbus, Ohio. This is post-approval of that conference, which was held on 10/28 to 10/29, in the amount of $600, respectively. As we move on to finance, we have several finance and transfers to consider today. The net impact of all of these is an increase in the general fund in the amount of $20,606. First, we have a transfer for Information Services Department for $6,000 between accounts to enable the purchase of some SAN software. Next, the Auditor's Department in the General Fund to transfer $6,989 in order to set up their PRS account for year end. Next, in the Insurance Department in the General Fund, Department 51, we have to reverse a previous entry for $28,000 and then to transfer entries between accounts for $10,000 to cover additional claims. Finally, to increase the budget in that particular department for insurance claims. Item number four, economic development. There's transfers between accounts for subscriptions and to enable the purchase of computers in the amount of $60 and $39.13, respectively. Number five, a transfer between accounts to set up their account for the final year in PRS payment in the prosecutor's office in the amount of $18,132. Number six, court services to increase their, it's a transfer between accounts, increase the amount in their health insurance account by $1,096. Number seven, district court a transfer between accounts of $2,000 to enable the purchase of a computer. Number eight, in the coroner's office, continuing in the general fund, a transfer between accounts in the amount of $2,225 in order to cover the year-end PRS payment. Next, for the Sheriff's Academy, in the general fund, two transfers, both in order to purchase ammunition. These are transfers between accounts. One is $2,163. The other is $575. Item number 10 in the Sheriff's Office, we have a transfer between accounts that sets up their PRS account for year-end. These transfers are as follows: $20,000, $111, $5,000, $3,671, $8,000, $1,545, and $4,000. Number 11, there's a transfer within the paramedic account in order to set up their employment costs for final year in payments. This is general fund. This is the sheriff's paramedic. Transfers between accounts of $3,500. $9,735, $1,765, $135, $46,972, $7,167. Item number 12, contingency, transfer of out of contingency to the sheriff's employment accounts, and in the amount of $6,000, in the amount of $169,000. Next, we have in the general fund, the Platt Room. We have a transfer between accounts of $702 to set up their PRS account for year end. And in the Platt Room, we also have an increase of $605 in order to set up their PRS account for year end. Item number 14, debt service. We have a transfer between account which corrects a original or an error to a original entry that placed the account or the appropriations in the wrong account. Number 15, we have transfers between the debt service fund or contingency fund to the sheriff's employment cost for $142,000 even and $297,000 even. Item number 16, which is now begins the non-general fund portions of the finance resolution. We have a decrease in the deputy registers Bureau of Motor Vehicles Fund 15 in amount of $12,000. In the health insurance fund, we have an increase in order to repay an advance to the general fund, increase in that budget for Fund 110 for $150,000, and then a transfer of the cash between the healthcare fund and the general fund to repay an advance from the general fund. Item number 18, the Recorder's Special Equipment Fund, Fund 210. This is a decrease in budget of $33,000. Item number 19, this is a CBCF grant. It's a decrease in budget of $4,171 and $449, respectively. For the Motor Vehicle Fund, Fund 1250 of the Engineer, we have a transfer between accounts of $500,000 to enable the payment of Trans Systems Consulting on the Butler Warren project. And then we have a decrease in budget of $1.7 million in the Motor Vehicle Fund. Now, item number 21, the Dog and Kennel Fund, we have a transfer between accounts of $513.33 to enable the final PRS payments. Item number 22, we have a decrease in Job and Family Services Fund number 1780 in the amount of $49,413. Item 23, Children's Services Fund 1800, we have a transfer between accounts for shared cost to client assistance and employee from professional development to client assistance in the amount of $49,413 and $15,000 respectively. Item number 24, the engineer's road improvements. We have a decrease in budget of $2,000. Item number 25, we have an increase in budget of $175,000 and $171,883 to set up for debt payment under this particular fund. It's a TIF fund. Next, under the item number 26, the Beacon Point Retirement Fund, we have a decrease in budget of 78 cents. Next, item number 27, the Greencrest Bond Retirement Fund, we have a decrease in budget of $1,408. Item number 28, Sewer Fund, $3,500. We have a decrease in budget for $21,487. Item 29, the sewer fund, Fund 3500. We have an increase of budget for in order to pay debt service in the amount of $42,360 and $86,612. Item number 30, the sewer capacity fund, Fund 3510. We have an increase in budget of $3,200 for a grinder repair at the North Pisgah lift station. Item number 31, which is the sewer replacement and improvement fund, Fund 3520. We have an increase in budget of $12,800, again, to accommodate the grinder repair at the North Pisgah lift station. Item number 32, it's water fund, Fund 4100. We have a decrease in budget of $31,256. Item 33, the water replacement and improvement fund, Fund 4120. We have an increase in budget of $53,666 in order to capitalize labor for Blue Max for the quarter. And item number 34, this is the parking garage fund 4901. We have a transfer between accounts in order to adjust the final PRS payment for the year in the amount of $77.53. We do not have any transfers for the care facility. We have a request for an amended certificate, an increase in fund 5200, the fuel feed depot, increased revenues of $70,000. Next, you have a request to approve a transfer of unclaimed funds, whereas the Butler County Auditor has compiled a report of unclaimed money, which is on file in the Auditor's Department, and determined that $274,539 of the balance of unclaimed money is remained in the fund for 5 years and therefore is enabled to be transferred to the general fund. Excuse me. As we go into personnel, we have 12 personnel actions to consider today. One is to place on file payroll. We have 2-step increases, 7 comp time payouts and personal time payouts, 1 unpaid leave, and 1 reclass. You know, first is to accept and place on file the payroll for Job and Family Services that has been reconciled back to previously approved authorizations of changes by the Butler County Commissioners. Second is to approve a step increase for Amy Hensley, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services. She's a social services worker 3, to the amount of $18.09, a 3.4% increase effective December 8th. Next is to approve a step increase for Vanessa Long, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services, to $21.69, effective December 18th, a 3.4% increase. Next is to approve a comp time payouts, Paul Cook, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services, in the amount of $96. Next, approve a comp time payout for James Jeffrey, Children's Services, collective bargaining unit member, in the amount of $192.10. Next is to approve comp time payout for Kimberly Short, Children's Services, collective bargaining unit member, in the amount of $174.60. Next is to approve a comp time payout for Sean Whitehead, in collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services, in the amount of $64.40. Next is to approve a comp time payout for Deborah Camera. She's a non-bargaining unit employee in Children's Services, in the amount of $377.49. Next is to approve another comp time payout, or this is a personal time payout for Sean Whitehead, collective bargaining unit member in Children's Services, for $67.27. Next is to approve a personal time leave payout to Frank Johnston, Children's Services, a non-collective bargaining unit member, for $308.31. Next, we have a request for you to approve an unpaid medical leave for Angela Ferris in the Butler County Water and Sewer Department, effective December 24th through January 31, 2009. Next, and finally, in personnel, we have a request to reclassify Kathleen Maggart in CSEA, a decrease in position to a clerk at a and reduce pay to $1,225 biweekly, a 4% decrease. As we move to Job and Family Services, we actually have five resolutions for you to consider today. There's six on your agenda. The last item on that section is pulled. We haven't got the documentation in yet. Anyway, for these five contracts, these are foster care contracts, and they are with, the first one is with Specialized Alternative for Families and Youth, Delphus, Ohio, in the amount of $559,454. It provides all four levels of foster care service at per diem rates. The second is Osterlin Services for Youth, Inc. This was in Springfield, Ohio. Total contract is $397,178. The next is the Talbert House, in the amount of $621,270, located in Cincinnati, Ohio. This particular foster care offers residential assessment as well as substance abuse treatment. Next foster care is Appgate for youth, and its location is in Dayton, Ohio, in the amount of $579,540. The next is the, and the Appgate provides all levels of foster care, including treatment and therapeutic expert services. The next is the Village Network in the amount of $250,000. Their location of these foster care facilities are in Wooster, Ohio, Knox County, Akron, Ohio, and Columbus, Ohio, and it's for treatment as well as sex offender counseling for this particular foster care area. Finally, the One Way Farm in Fairfield, Ohio, in the amount not to exceed $136,000, provides residential group home and emergency shelter services. As we move on to water and sewer, has four for your consideration today. The first is to approve a loan agreement with the Ohio EPA's Water Pollution Control Loan Fund. The amount is $1,168,764, you know, at an interest rate of 3.4% for 20 years. Next is to approve another EPA's Water Pollution Control Loan Fund agreement in the amount of $925,684. This is for the Shaker Creek Relief Sewer Project, where the previous loan agreement was for the Big Monroe Parallel Force Main. Again, the interest rate is 3.4% for 20 years. Next, the Water and Sewer is asking you to approve and execute a contract for Shaker Creek Relief Sewer with Brochure Contractors in the amount of $873,967. Water and Sewer also asked you to receive and refer bids for the Yankee Road Water Main Project. This particular bids we received 15 bids with a low bid from Don May Contracting at $376,773 and CK Excavating for $508,474. Now for the engineer. The engineer proposes seven resolutions for your consideration today. The first is to approve an agreement with Trans Systems for Engineering Services on Butler Warren Road, not to exceed $507,138. Next is to approve an agreement with Warren County for construction on the Butler Warren Road project, not to exceed $507,138. Next, the engineer asked you to approve an amendment to the load limit list, removing the following road limits or bridge limits, load limits on bridges. The first is to remove the Allen Road Bridge, second is to remove the Corso Road Bridge, and third is to remove the Elk Creek Road Bridge. These bridges have been replaced and rehabilitated. The engineer is also placing on file an updated bridge and culvert load limit list dated December 12, 2008. The engineer asked you to grant a special hauling permit to Bowling Transportation. Engineer also requests you to grant a special hauling permit to Phillips and Jordan, Inc. The engineer asks you to exchange of a sidewalk performance bond for the preserves at Weatherington, Section 1. They ask you to exchange performance bonds for the preserves at preserves of Weatherington, Section 1 again. Now, as we move on to miscellaneous, we have seven miscellaneous pieces of legislation for you to consider. The first is to approve the donation of two Sheriff's Office motorcycles to the Oxford Police Department, two Kawasaki's, a 1996 and a 1997 Kawasaki motorcycle. Next is to authorize information services to use a county credit card for the purchase of a site-safe software license. Next is to authorize Butler County Fair Care Facility to apply for a community development grant for replacing sidewalk. Also, another to authorize Butler County Care Facility to apply for community development grant for washing machines. Next is to approve the removal of Westchester Point properties from the landscaping assessment, as Westchester Point properties paid their landscaping assessment, you know, in full. Next is to approve a miscellaneous reimbursement of $30.27 for Marianne Williams for Workforce One meeting, a light breakfast, November 21st, $30.27. Next, to approve a reimbursement of $91.46 to Marvin Davis for the purchase of ammunition. And finally, to approve a resolution for 306 authorized payments, which you've been supplied a list of previously. There are no other separate resolutions on today's agenda, even though we have one listed there.
Move for approval.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes. I neglected to say we need to move to excuse Commissioner Jolivet from today's meeting.
I'll move to do that.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes. Do you have anything?
I have nothing.
Anyone in the audience have anything for the commission?
Mark Hevercos, 7356 Weathersfield Drive in Westchester. Several months ago, the commissioners requested bids from outside contractors to extend the Butler County fiber optic network to connect the new Miami University Voice of America facility. It is my understanding three bids were received some weeks ago, with Cincinnati Bell being the highest bidder of the three. I've just learned the county is signing or has signed a contract to lease fiber from Cincinnati Bell to accomplish the identical objective as the public bid. What you may or may not know, in the several weeks before the public bid was due, Cincinnati Bell installed the identical fiber optic line connecting the Butler County network to the new Miami Voice of America facility. In fact, in these same weeks before the bids were open, Cincinnati Bell installed a splice connection into the Butler County network on Butler Warren Road and left a coil of extra fiber hanging on the pole right next to the Miami facility. Other contractors that were surveying the job with hopes of bidding the contract carefully watched Cincinnati Bell's installation. This fiber installation by Cincinnati Bell was meant to circumvent the public bidding process, which the county now intends to lease. I have personally dealt with Cincinnati Bell on fiber optic installation deals, and I've been told by them they will not install a single foot of fiber without a signed contract for services. How is it that Cincinnati Bell, in the weeks before the public bids were opened, installed over a mile of fiber with the intent to serve the same customer requested in the public bid? Who made the determination to negate two other bidders to opt for this deal with Cincinnati Bell? This all leads to one big batch of final questions. How is it that 96 strands of fiber optic cable installed for Butler County, paid for by taxpayers, is now somehow under the control of private businesses? Were they given the fiber? Did they pay for it? In closing, this process shows how Butler County taxpayers are getting a raw deal. When qualified contractors learn someone else already has an alleged inside deal with the county, they'll never waste their time submitting public bids. I ask the commissioners to throw out this deal with Cincinnati Bell and rebid the project to restore faith in the public bidding process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Familiar with the situation, Tim? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah.
Are you done? Do you want to answer to this or just take it under advisement?
I can speak to it. Tim, why don't you go first and then I'll follow you.
Certainly, you know, as I explained to you on the phone, Mark, there's been no agreement prior to any installation at Cincinnati Bell. Cincinnati Bell, if they put any fiber in, is strictly up to their, you know, up to their own risk. You know, our current lease agreement with them, you know, requires them, if we option to decide to own the fiber, it requires them to install the fiber, not use what is already existing on the poles. It requires new construction to install it. According to the specs that exist. You know, that's the specifics of the lease agreement. As far as, you know, evaluating the bids, the three bids that we have, I've got our information service director, Greg Sullivan, I think can comment and compare the three bids that were received. Greg?
Yeah, we
Greg, you want to come up to the record?
Sure. Information Services Department developed the bid specs for the project based at a request of Tim Williams, County Commissioner's Office. We reviewed the three bids that were received. One bid was extremely low and was deemed not compatible or not sufficient because of many make-ready cost and that were not included in the bid. The last two bids that were reviewed, Cincinnati Bell's and another company, we reviewed those, determined that I think there was a total of a $200 difference between the construction bids between the two companies. We felt delivered to Mr. Williams our view of these two bids, and that we felt the Cincinnati Bell bid was better because, one, the cost difference was so small. Secondly, we felt that Cincinnati Bell's experience with the existing Miami University network, which is what we were actually building here, this is not the county's network, this is an extension of Miami University's network that runs on the county fiber optic backbone, that was extremely important in this project. We also felt that with existing maintenance support monitoring capabilities that we have contracted with Cincinnati Bell, this was very important in the final decision on supporting Miami University's portion of their portion of the network on our county fiber optic backbone. I think that the presence of Cincinnati Bell in the Westchester area, the knowledge of that area, I think it was also another consideration, although minor, in the scheme of why, in the total evaluation of the bids.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Haber-Cos, I'd like to, first of all, thank you for taking the time to look at this issue and putting effort into it to identify a concern you think may exist. Let me say that Cincinnati Bell was, and I'm going back from history. Cincinnati Bell contracted and installed most of that fiber. In fact, I guess installed all the fiber in the ground for Butler County. So they do have kind of a inherent built-in advantage, because, you know, they have built what's there. They know what's there. They, I think, even control some of the connection points, and I don't claim to know all the technical stuff about it. But let me tell you what the county did. That connection was supposed to have been built when the original system was built at no cost to the county. And for whatever reason, that contract got amended several times. And it's unclear whose responsibility that is at this point. Ended up being a letter from our former administrator that just guaranteed to Miami University that it would be put in and it wouldn't be any cost to them. This was after it had been revised. The contract had been revised two or three times. This commission sent that question to the prosecutor's office and said, tell us here who is responsible to build this. Now, long story short, and it's in the legal process, and I can't get into all the legal aspects of it. I can just tell you that it's being looked into, it's being pursued. One of the reasons one of the companies that bid that, I believe it may well be liable to pay for the whole thing, whether who builds it. But I can tell you that we're going to use our best efforts to make sure that no county dollars pay for that. But we had an obligation to Miami University, and they were getting ready to open, and they did have a letter from our administrator that said it wouldn't cost them. So we had to get that issue out of the way and get them open, and that we've done. And we've also pursued this through the prosecutor's office. It's being pursued now. The attorneys are looking through it. We have there's been dialogue with the original attorneys that wrote the agreement. One of the companies that bid this, like I said before, may well be liable to pony up and write the check to pay for the whole thing, but it shouldn't be Butler County. So we're pursuing those different actions. One of the reasons that I was in favor of leasing it was because that negates any out front costs for us. We're going to recoup those dollars. We're going after whoever's responsible, and we're going to recapture those. So and if you look at the history of who can install it and who can run it and who does the maintenance on the system now, there are really only two viable companies. One of them is a company in question of where they should have, that parent company should have originally paid for it or not, and the other was Cincinnati Bell. So it made a lot of sense. Cincinnati Bell is in the area. So it made a lot of sense for us just to lease that with them, temporarily get Miami University in service, get them online, and we're gonna pursue our legal remedies to recapture that money. But it was pretty prudent on your part to sort through that and figure that out. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't be the county's, not one penny of the county dollars, and we're pursuing that. And I can't get into all the legal issues with you because I'm not. That's not something I'm allowed to do based on the attorneys that are handling it. But I can assure you that this commission's on it. We're looking at it, and we're going to get Miami University up and running. We got an obligation to them. We're going to fulfill that. But we're also going to make sure that we don't use any county dollars to make sure that service is in there. And I don't care who puts it in the ground because we're not paying for any of it.
I have one follow-up concern to what you and Mr. Sullivan have just said is Cincinnati Bell has an inherent advantage to the bidding process by all of the things that you just said, with them being already a part of the system, already being involved in, deeply involved in it. Why wouldn't information like that be disseminated in the bidding process to where qualified contractors who would be bidding wouldn't be wasting their time knowing that they're up against a brick wall in the first place? Well, and I think we saw the evidence of that. Cincinnati Bell obviously knew that because they installed the fiber ahead of time. I mean, it would be no different than saying that a local car dealer has an advantage because they're located down the street from the county. And because they're so close, we're going to do business with them. I think it sends the wrong message in the bidding process that the county should be more upfront in their language to say this needs to be installed in this kind of time frame. And obviously Cincinnati Bell knew what that time frame was, and that's why they went ahead and installed it prior to the bid opening to make it more attractive to the county.
And let me make this perfectly clear. Up until just a couple weeks ago when we agreed that we were going to lease that, we were going to build it. And Cincinnati Bell wasn't going to be the contractor to build it. Now, those prices were very competitive with Cincinnati Bell and the other person. And the third person was cheaper, which you know, our IT people said too cheap to make it work. I don't know. I'd have probably given them a shot, but hey, they're the experts. But those two were very comparable. Now, the only reason that I voted, my vote was to lease it, was because there's no upfront dollar cost. There's really, Cincinnati Bell could have hung that, if in fact you're correct, and I don't know if you are, I'm just for a minute assume that you're correct, if they hung the extra line on the pole as they went by, that could have been hanging there for 50 years and never used. That was a business decision they made. I'm going to tell you that there was no intent, no indication. Cincinnati Bell, until just the last moment, and Tim came up with this idea of leasing it rather than us building it, they weren't going to be the ones. So if they in fact thought they had an advantage, they would in fact had that material or whatever they had used to anticipate that as their business decision would have been the wrong one, because they were not going to get it. Now, I explained the thought process of why I wanted to lease it, because when the day is finished, the county's not going to pay for it anyway, whether it's Cincinnati Bell or whomever. So, but I have to share this with you. I think Cincinnati Bell has an inherent advantage. They built the system. It's like if you're General Motors and you build a car and you got a specific part that you only make and somebody else has got to go buy that part to fix the car, I mean, you know, who's got the advantage? I mean, that's the way it works. Now, we can write all the specs we want and write all the requirements we want, but I think the bidding process was fair. Cincinnati Bell had no indication. And they were not the front runners. If we were to go reach in a pocket and build it, they would have not been building it. They just got the lease because it helped our general fund, so we could go recapture that money in the future, which we intend to do. The main purpose was to get Miami University up and running.
Thank you for your time.
All right,
Commissioner. In addition, it should be pointed out that we had a much larger, more expensive bid in Middletown. You know, whereby, you know, these two same bidders, two of the three bidders, also bid on that project. Cincinnati Bell was not the award
right,
on
they
that
didn't
project.
Get it. Yeah. But I do appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Anyone else have anything before commission?
Bob Krieger, 1907 Crucker Road, Hanover Township. Good morning, gentlemen. Happy holidays. What I've been reading in the paper about Bill Turner and the response of the EMA has some concerns of mine. Before we go looking to replace Bill Turner, to me it sounds like a finger pointing between the sheriff's office and the EMA. Questions need to be asked. Was the EMA ever dispatched during the emergency of the windstorm? If they were, how long did it take them to respond? If in fact they just assumed the magnitude of that would have made Bill Turner to come in, Bill would have been stepping on feet. I disagree with Bill in some opinions of his that we've talked. But I also disagree with finger pointing after the fact and my case not knowing whether they were dispatched or not. From what I've talked to at least one EMA member from the on that they were not dispatched during that time, that they were not toned out. Then I think it's a situation that happened to me years ago, that a manager I had summed up it very wisely. And those words were, most misunderstandings are caused because there was never an understanding in the first place. I'm wondering if responsibilities, responses, and that have a real understanding, true deep understanding between the sheriff's office, the police offices, the fire departments, and the EMA. The EMA can step on toes, or they can be very helpful in situations. Fire departments do not like other fire departments responding as mutual aid without them being called first, just because they think they're going to be needed. Dispatch needs to be found out. And also, who dispatches the EMA? Who makes the decision that they get activated? Is it the first responder that's on the scene that sees a devastation that he or she feels they need it, or do they have to go through chains of command of 2, 3, 4 different fire or police officers to make a senior officer make that decision? I don't know the protocol. I do know that if a police officer is driving down the street and sees my house on fire, I don't want him to have to call the commander to find out if the fire department's going to respond or not. I want him to be able to call for the fire department right away. I liken that to the same situation as if the police officer on the scene, regardless of rank, the fire officer in charge of the scene, regardless of rank, should be able to notify the County Communication Center to activate it if, in their opinion, the FMA is needed. Some training needs to be done through all departments on that. The thing has been a lot of times that there's finger pointing on who is the scapegoat for inadequacies when they happen. No doubt we were not prepared for a hurricane in Butler County. Had I sat here a year ago and suggested that we pre-plan for a hurricane, everybody in this room would have laughed at me. They had a similar situation in Evendale with a tidal wave. Who would think of a tidal wave in Evendale? But it has happened. You don't plan for these things when they've never happened before. You can only hope that the first responders, which they do very wonderful jobs of flying by the seat of their pants to mitigate everything. To say that Bill Turner should have known by looking outside that he had a disaster, had he been on my lot, he would not have thought he would have been needed. I had 5 shingles blown off the house, and I was out of electric for 7 days. Out of electric is a call to Duke Energy, not to the fire department. And 5 shingles, you're not going to activate EMA out of. So he may not have known until he heard communications of it. That's the reason why they have direct communications with the county dispatchers. That being said, that was my opinion. I'm glad that you heard it. A second point. It came up during the emergency, that with a lot of phone lines down, people relied on cell phones for communications. 911 system has been going to install wireless phone in locators. I've been before the commission before that several times before. I'd like to know when the completion date for the wireless E911 be communicated to me, when if Tim or somebody appropriate in the county administration would find it out and communicate it to me. I will give him my email number at the conclusion of the meeting. Furthermore, with projects like this, like the dog kennel and that, I'm suggesting that the county look into, in the information technology section, establishing a web page where the county managers, the managers of the projects, can post online in the county web page timelines, so the people on projects that the people are interested in, so we don't have to bother Tim, or so that Tim and yourselves can find it at a flick of a computer screen, and so we don't have to come down. I'm suggesting an improvement into the system, and I think it's possible.
I think it's on there, Bob.
We'll double check. It was at one time we talked about putting the Gantt chart, you know, on the on air. So I'll check to make sure it's on there or not.
Well, if it is on there, it's the way it's described, I have not been able to find it.
Okay.
And it may need to have a more simplified nomenclature on that to where the people can find it.
Okay.
And I thank you.
Let me just let me just, I don't want to reiterate or regurgitate all the stuff that's gone on here, but I want to clarify the record, okay? This whole issue with EMA is not about the storm. You have every police chief in Butler County have said to us they have no confidence in that department and they do not want to participate from history, from their past experience. Now, I don't care how good you are, and I don't care how good the others believe. I'd be saying the same thing. It was the fire people. Those two entities have got to be together on this issue. We don't have an EMA if you don't have the police and the fire together. Now, it's as simple as that. It wasn't our performance in a storm. That's not the issue. Okay. The issue is that we cannot allow the police department to not be included for whatever reason. I don't care whose fault it is. We can't have that. And if you don't have the ability to bring both of those entities together, then you don't have anything. And that's where we are. Now, the board's made its decision, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, we'll see what happens.
And then again, my comment was, I don't think there was a true understanding there between all parties involved, and that can help it in the future. I thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Just a little bit of clarification on that. Excuse me. It was a very unusual situation, and fortunately here in Butler County there were no serious injuries or death. We're very lucky there, as an awful lot of people jumped in to help out at the right time. When I'm talking about safety officers, both police and fire, it's my understanding that the 800 megahertz did work through the entire storm, and that's very encouraging. It's just the fact that not enough people had the radios yet. That should be online in the very near future, and hopefully that'll be a leg up should we have another situation like that. We hope and pray we don't, but I've received information from a few of the chiefs who was not involved in the meeting and did not agree with that particular meeting. Those at the meeting, apparently it was unanimous, and I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but Commissioner Dixon is right in the fact that we have to have everybody on board working together. We cannot have split safety divisions. The police and the fire, they have worked well together on the 800 megahertz system, and that has been a real positive thing for Butler County. I don't think this is insurmountable. I think it's something that we need to work with, and the board has voted that we would like to have the police chief have a member on the board so that they can get out their frustrations or anything that they're not in agreement with. They have a seat at the table. And we'll most definitely try to work with them, because it is imperative that they work together. But thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
I think that's an excellent idea. I mean, you bring a lifetime of knowledge of the police department. You know how important they are. And I'm not saying one's more important than the other, but I think you raised an excellent point. My thought is that, you know, maybe that's how we solve it. But I would offer this: if there's three fire chiefs on that board, executive committee, then there ought to be three police chiefs.
It's been offered. It's up to the various communities who they want to appoint to that particular department. They have not been intentionally left off, so that's something.
Yeah.
And the board has a minimum, and we have that minimum, but it doesn't say. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Sheets, you can't add additional members to that. Is that? Yes. And that's our intent,
yeah,
to add more. Even if they didn't appoint the police chiefs at the time from the various governmental entities, we can at this time go ahead and have them appointed.
I think it might solve a whole lot of problems, and I think they should be even. I always found that if you're dealing with any of the police, the fire safeties, they like to feel like they're equals. So if you have three fire, you ought to have three police. And if the board can amend that or change that or whatever, I think that might go a long ways in what you're suggesting.
I think it's up to the entities of who they want to appoint, who they want to send. But we're more than happy to have an equal number. I think it's a great idea. the more heads, the more ideas. And I think it's imperative, period that they get along, and I think this is a one way to start back on the road to recovery on that.
Good
point.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Anyone else? Greg, appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.